Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. I'm glad you came by. Today is Bullies to Buddies Day. And if you listen to the show regularly, you know that at least once a week we talk about bullying. We talk about bullying in almost every arena. School, home, workplace, church, social gatherings, every place where you have people. People are all different, and people all have different points of view, different opinions, and different likes and dislikes, right? We all get that. We all know that. So one of the things that I think we do that we shouldn't do is we don't prepare our kids for the fact that this isn't a fairy tale. Your little princess will not be the little princess in everybody's life. Your little football star won't be the star in everybody else's life. I think understanding the fact that family has that strength and that support and that ability to make your child feel like they're very special and they're important to their family is important to do. Very, very important to do. Helps them grow up with lots of self-worth, a little bit of self-esteem, all the things that we know are important for well-adjusted people, not just kids, people. So the problem with that is that supports unrealistic expectations of what's going to happen out there in the real world. I think I've said this on the show before, but when I realized everybody didn't think my kids were the cutest, the sweetest, the funniest, the most adorable, I was devastated. I was devastated. I couldn't understand how anybody didn't see what I saw in my children. And the first time I thought somebody didn't like one of my kids, I was ready to kill. I mean, I was like, oh my God, what are you thinking? So, if I thought that in my 20s, what did my kids expect? What did my kids think was going to happen to them when they were away from mommy and daddy and grandma and grandpa and older brothers and sisters, whatever the case might be? They had expectations that were probably not going to be fulfilled. You see what I'm saying? It's about being able to be prepared for what life is going to dish out to you. So in Izzy's book, he talks about this at length. He talks about how you prepare your child to live in a world that is not a fairy tale. In the book it says, the philosophy of life being promoted today. You are entitled to live in a world without mean people. If people are mean to you, it has nothing to do with you, your behavior, or your attitudes. It is only because of them. It is not your responsibility to do anything to get people to stop being mean to you. Just inform the authorities when people are being mean to you, and the authorities will make them stop. Now, that's a joke. That's not going to happen. And you see that if you take a young child and actually instill in them that they have the God-given right to have everybody be nice to them, you're doing them a major injustice, a major, major injustice. You know, I know people that are way past being children, way past being young adults, who still think that they deserve to be heard, still think that they deserve to be rewarded for getting up and going to work every day, still think that they need to get kudos for, paying their bills and washing their car every now and then, or taking care of their kids. That's not a truism either. You don't get rewarded for doing what you should be doing. At least you shouldn't get rewarded for that, unless you want to count your paycheck as a reward, the fact that people love you as a reward, the fact that people respect what you do at your job as a reward. But to be told every day, oh my God, you're doing such a good job, who's a big boy, or who's a good girl, that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. You are expected as an adult to carry certain responsibilities. And as a child, you need to be taught that you have the right to be unharmed. You have the right to feel safe. But they are not promises once you go out there into the real world. There are people who won't love you the way mommy and daddy do. There are bigger kids that won't look out for you and make sure you get to go first or make sure you have the last cookie that aren't your brother and sister. The point is that you have to be prepared to be a part of society. And it's not a fairy tale. It can be cold and uncaring. And maybe that's one of the reasons why home and family have lost some of their significance, because people are growing up thinking that that's the way it's supposed to be in the outside world, and they're in for such a major disappointment that that starts certain ramifications too, and the outlook somebody has about their life. So let's bring Shell in, because I want to talk about some of the things in the workbook today and some of the expectations that young people have. And again, I know people who are well past being young people who still think that this is the way the world's supposed to treat them, and actually get angry and hurt and miserable to be around because it's not treating them that way. Good morning, Shell.
Well, good morning, Rainey. Sorry I was a couple minutes late. I got stuck taking care of something before I called in.
No problem. I just hate that you miss everything, and I feel like I have to tell you over again, and I don't think anybody wants to hear everything over again. But in the workbook today, what I really, really want to talk about is the expectations that people have about how they're supposed to be treated in the outside world. And
yeah, I could kind of tell where you were going based on a couple of the comments I did hear.
And it's, you know, I mean, it's about the fact that it's not, you know, make-believe. Here's what I posted today on Facebook, because this kind of sums it up without me talking about it too much. We'll work on some of the issues that happen in schools and at home when we are unrealistic about human behavior, and when we fail to prepare our young people about their expectations regarding how to get along with others. It's a game of give and take. It's not a fairy tale. It's an opportunity to hone your diplomatic skills. Without diplomacy, you lose. No one can be right all the time. It's important to respect the opinions of others. Balanced, balance, balance is what it's all about. So, as I say, if you grow up in a home which is nice when you're growing up, where you're the princess or you're the little prince. That's good. And you want that to be special. And you want that to be kind of like the safe domain. But when you're in the outside world, remember, everybody that you're sitting in that kindergarten class with hopefully was treated the same way you were at home. So you all can't be princes and princesses once
right.
you're in that kind of a scenario. You have to be respectful of little Susie over here. Her mommy and daddy told her she was the princess. What do you mean you're the princess? You're not the princess. I'm the princess. You see what that creates with all the kids. So when you're preparing them to adjust themselves to the outside world, they have to learn about sharing, giving and taking, and the fact that they all have to get along together. Now, you're not going to tell a five-year-old to be a diplomat because they're going to say, huh? But that's really what you have to be, and that's the way you get along best in the world in general.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think you can teach young children, and I'm saying it's because it's what I was taught, that they're special to their family, but then on the outside world, they're going to have to work to get respect and to let people know who they are, because people outside the family don't know that they're special, don't know that they're gifted, and they're going to have to let people see that. So they're going to have to, you know, be responsible. So a lot of, like, my work ethic and things like that came from that, because I was taught that, you know, like, my mom felt that, you know, my sister and I were brilliant and that we were this and that, but she always cautioned us. She said, but that's because, she said, here in the family, we get to see you all the time, but when you're out there, people are too busy and they're not going to notice that. So you have to let people know that you're talented. You have to work hard, things like that. So she kind of gave us the flip side of that coin, so that we didn't expect to be treated the way we were treated in our family outside the house, you know, and that kind of stuff. So that is one way of dealing with it with children, is letting them know that the way they're being treated in their family is because it's family. It also makes them appreciate family more, because they recognize that family is always going to support them no matter what, is always going to love them no matter what, but that they have to kind of earn that same behavior from the outside world by how they conduct themselves. And I think that may be a missing element in a lot of parenting and in, you know, teaching kids that it's a family thing and that they can't just blindly expect that from people. They're going to have to earn it on the outside. What they get from family is because it's family. But to get treated like that from other people, they have to earn that.
Exactly. But that's what's missing. That's what's
right.
missing. There isn't the preparing for being in the outside world. There isn't the talk that says, you know, nothing has changed here at home. We still think you're our princess. But,
yeah.
You know, all the other little girls in your kindergarten class are the princesses in their castles, just like you are here. That conversation doesn't take place often enough and isn't, and it also has to be reinforced in the years to come. It has to be talked about even when your kid gets their first job. I've had all my kids come to me when they take their first job. You know, I'm the only one who does this, and I'm the only one who does that, and I listen to them and everything, and I say, and how do you know you're the only one that does that? Well, because I see. I'm the one that goes and does this. I'm the only one that replaces the paper. I'm the only one that makes sure that the printer's got ink in it. I'm the only one who does their side work at the end of the busy time. I'm the only one that completes all the paperwork. You hear these things all the time, don't you? In the workplace, everywhere.
You
hear
sure.
them all the time. I'm the only one that does all this stuff. Nobody else finishes what they're supposed to finish. Nobody else restocks when they're done. Nobody, you know. So this person was never taught about diplomacy. And the deal is you can't just have one kid in a class of 20 that gets that they're not the princess once they leave their front door. Because if all the rest of them still think they're princesses, the likelihood of the kid that you've talked to, the little girl that you've said now, you know, it's not going to be the same there, because there's lots of little girls who feel, you know, pretty special already, and you don't want to kill that. You want people to maintain that strength because it helps them. But you have to talk to them about the fact that now they have to share that limelight. They have to share all of the things that has always been special for them, and then when they come home, then they're back in that safe realm again. It would actually, if we did more of this, it would actually maybe even help family and home life become stronger than what it is becoming today.
Right.
You know what
right.
I mean?
Because
if you
got that family bond again in discussion and actually pointed out the children that may not be realizing it on their own, you know, like you have a support system here. You have people that love you and are behind you no matter what, and sometimes they just need to hear those words because maybe they're not feeling it right now. You know, maybe things have happened in the family or there's been some challenges, and maybe they need to hear it and point it out to them so they can actually look at their family with fresh eyes and say, well, you know, I really do have it pretty good here. You know, I really do have a loving family and all that, you know, even with all their idiosyncrasies and their the things that they do. But we have a pretty good family, you know, and it would help a kid to grow up feeling that family bond,
mm-hmm.
where it might not be something that they take notice of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes you have to help a child to be observant in a positive way, where they may be observant, but they may be taking a situation wrong. You need to help direct how they perceive things as they develop their abilities to perceive things, as they develop their perceptions, kind of lead them in the way you want them to go. Like I did with my dear Cody a couple weeks ago. He had a particular perception of a story, and I very gently told him that I would have preferred it come out a different way, and now that's the only way he tells me the story. He learned instantaneously how to make me smile, and he likes that. He wants to make me smile. He's a very sweet child, very compassionate, you know, but it's very easy to redirect a child and to help them perceive a situation more positively than they may be looking at it, including how they look at their own family.
Mm-hmm. Well, and again, you're setting them up, maybe even unbeknownst to you, for a fall. You're setting them up for a disappointment. They're gonna go into a classroom for the first time, which all on its own is scary, frightening. You feel all alone. And if you're thinking that everybody in the classroom is going to notice how you're feeling and what's upsetting you and what's going to make you happy again, oh, boy, that's never going to work. That's never going to work. Even if I took you, Shelley, right now, and I put you in a room with a whole bunch of other adults who had something to share, would all the other adults in the room let you talk first just because you're Shelley?
Probably not.
They would. No. Would all the other people in the room give your theory or your input on the subject more relevant than what they're going to say? No. So even in the adult world, you have to be prepared to be a diplomat. Well, Shelley, I like part of what you just said, but can we add the way I feel about this too and see if we can't bring them together? That's what a diplomat says. And that's what we want our kids today. We want, let's take a second grade class. They're a little bit more developed. They're not as young as a 5 and sometimes even 4-year-olds start kindergarten. So let's take second grade. They're a little bit older. How old is Cody now? He's like almost as old as AJ, right? Oh, he's only five. Okay. So AJ's 7 and 8 year olds, right, in second grade. They're already learning the ropes a little bit, and even if they haven't had the tutelage that we're talking about right here, in some cases, I think some kids get this, but in this class, teacher separates you into teams. Each team is three people, and they have to, maybe the class assignment is draw your favorite Christmas memory, you know, but three kids have got to do it together. Well, each kid is going to think that their Christmas memory is the best, and they're going to want to draw theirs. So as a team, the teacher teaches them how to take a little something from Joe, a little something from Larry, and a little something from Pete, right? So that the picture has a little bit of all of them in it. That's a big lesson for an 8-year-old to learn, because they're pretty sure that everything that happened to them or their memory is going to be the coolest, the best, right? Because that's the way we think. So when the teacher teaches them to use the kind of diplomacy that says, oh, I like what Pete just said, yeah, let's put that in, and learn how to work as a team, that's when they start developing the ability to see other people's point of view, be a little bit diplomatic about, even if you still think in your heart, oh, my story is just so much better. But, you know, it's because it's your story. So right. Once they learn how to share the limelight in something like that and take a little piece from each one of them, they become a stronger kid. They become a stronger kid because now they've got the ability to, first of all, listen. Second of all, give some appreciation to somebody else's thoughts and personal memories. And it makes them a stronger kid, a stronger friend, a stronger loved one, everything. But so much of that is missing because we talk so much in everything we see about being number one, about being the one that's always right, about being the smartest in the class, about being the prettiest in the class. That's how we tend to teach them. And that's not going to work because you have to give space to other people. One of the things, there's a quote in this part of the book that is, he who has so little knowledge of human nature as to seek happiness by changing anything but his own disposition will waste his life away in fruitless efforts.
Wow, I like that.
That's
sort of the man in the mirror sentiment.
And it is about learning to give. And to, but besides that, have you ever had an aha moment where you're so sure that something is going to work and somebody else says something to you and you're like, oh, my God, that's a great idea. That's so much better than what I was thinking. I didn't even go there. How many times have you had that happen to you? I've had it happen to me a million times. But I think the difference is people like you and I, instead of fighting it because it's not our idea, think we have to take a stand against it because we're not the ones who thought of it.
Instead, and I know a lot of people
we look
like
at it
that.
And say, so do I, Shelley. Millions.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Like I said, you and I are very much like that. If I see, when I was a manager and I would give directives out to people, I would always tell them, now, if you, because I like open communication and I like people feel uncomfortable coming to me. I said, now, if anything I tell you to do a particular way, you have found a better way to do it, come and let me know. But let me know first, not because I don't want things to change. I said, but if you're going to be doing it differently and it's better, I said, I just need to look at what you're doing to make sure you're still covering all the same steps. And if, in fact, it is better, then I'll be more than happy to make the change. But everybody has to be doing it the same way. So if any of you see a better way, bring it to my attention and let me know. And a couple of times, things were brought to my attention, and I was like, wow, this is better. It takes less time. It's more streamlined. It worked better. Sometimes not, and people would get upset with me. because they felt they had this brilliant idea, but their idea really wasn't better because it skipped a couple of crucial steps. You know what I'm saying? But they would get, it was almost like they would take it personal if I didn't implement what they brought to me. So I saw both sides of the coin. People that were very willing to bring their ideas and people that were not willing to have their ideas not acted on because they felt that it was better even if I showed them it wasn't. So you see a lot of this in adults, you know, the unwillingness to be realistic just because they had an idea that, you know, that it still has to be looked at and things like that. Wasn't it, Izzy, you might have read this in the beginning before I called in, wasn't there a part of the book where Izzy talks about the fact that, like, in all the sports teams now for little kids, everybody gets a trophy, whether they've acted exceptionally or not, whether they win or not, everybody gets a trophy now, and he thinks that's a bad idea because it's teaching kids that they get rewarded basically for non-effort, you know, for nothing special, and then they get out into the real world and they don't know why they're still not getting accolades and pats on the back for just doing the bare minimum of what something requires.
Well, I think we did talk. It's not in the workbook. I mean, there might be a couple sentences that support the fact that you shouldn't be, well, like I said in the beginning of the show, I know adults that think that they should get kudos for going to work every day.
Right, right.
Or for paying their bills on time.
Yeah, that same expectation, you know.
Yes,
like when
yes.
when you're a kid in your room, it's like, oh, you know, they get a gold star. When they're little kids, you know, they get a gold star. Once they're 16 years old, hopefully you stop giving them gold stars by now because they better be cleaning their room because now it's their responsibility. You know, the whole positive reinforcement is a good idea when children are very, very little because it teaches them to want those hallmarks, to want to get that gold star because they clean their room. But at some point, you know, they should be cleaning their room now because they've developed that sense of responsibility. They don't get a gold star anymore, you know. You know, don't go into the whole, you know, I'm doing something that's expected of me reward system anymore because now it's something expected of them. Now if they don't do it, they lose a privilege. Just like in a job, if you don't perform, you're either going to get in trouble, get suspended, or actually lose the job completely. You know what I'm saying? So, but I think a lot of carry that praise too long, you know, past the point of teaching a young child to want to excel in things because they like that approval, they like being praised, you know, but at some point it has to go from being praised to do something to becoming a responsibility and expectation, and that transition is usually can be kind of a comfortable one. But it's a transition that needs to take place, and I think in a lot of families it never does. So this child grows up into an adult with still those expectations of being praised for every little thing they do, including, like you said, showing up to work.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's like many times in my capacity as the boss, I've had people come in and say to me, you know, you haven't given me a review, and it's been, you know, I thought we were supposed to get reviewed once a year, and I look at them and say, okay, it's kind of hard now that we have all these employees to give everybody a review once a year. I think raises and promotions should come alongside of efforts and performance. And can you tell me what you've done this past year that was above and beyond? Well, I come to work every day. I'm never late. I said, you are supposed to come to work every day, and you're not supposed to be late. You consider that above and beyond what your job description is? Well, I guess not. So then tell me, you know, because maybe I've missed something. You know, maybe you have done something that deserves some recognition, maybe monetary recognition, but I'm not aware of it. So if you can tell me what it is, then we'll talk about it. Well, and they sit and they look and they you know, they mention a couple little things. I don't take a lunch hour, I had somebody say to me one day. Why? Well, because I'm doing my work. I say, you can't get your work done and have a lunch hour? Well, sometimes. Well, is this job too hard for you? Then all of a sudden you can see this little light go on in their head and they're thinking to themselves, yeah, why don't I take a lunch hour? And can I get the job done? And maybe, you know, so then they start questioning themselves. It's the same with a kid, you know. Graham, can I do this? Or Mom, can I do that? Okay, how are we going to work that out so that, you know, this works for everybody? And thinking about things and being a part of the decisions that are made for you and about you is important. It's a part of growing up. One of the things that he writes, he has a section called Abandoning Basic Guidelines of Counseling and Psychotherapy. He has, our job is to help people understand and solve their problems, not to protect them from problems. We should only protect people who are truly incapable of learning to protect themselves. Now, that bullet point, it kind of sums up a big part of the problem.
Yeah.
If you're going to step up to the plate all the time and make allowances for people, you're doing them a major injustice. And I know, because I'm one of those kind of people that does that for other people. Well, they're not good at this, so I'll do this. Or they won't take care of this. I know they won't because I gave it to them before and they didn't do it, so I do it for them. I am your personification of an enabler, and I know that about myself. And then he has, we cannot help our clients by trying to make other people change. Amen.
That is about the truest, best piece of information so far.
Yes. I mean, there is just no way that you can change the rest of the world to fit you. Just no way. We are not to take sides between people. Doing so escalates hostilities and prevents them from solving their problems with each other. That's another biggie. Have you ever got involved with a married couple that is having trouble, and both of them, they're both your friends, you care about both of them, and they both come to you at separate times? I mean, I've counseled couples. And in counseling a couple, I find you do very little talking. Very, very little talking. Because almost everything you say sides with one of them. So you mostly listen and let them work through all of their stuff together. So in counseling, even friends for that matter, even siblings, brothers and sisters, and sisters and sisters, it's more about giving, that's a new word I just made up, giving them an opportunity to hear each other and just sit and listen. I know Shelley can speak firsthand to having me sit in on her and staff members. When she was working in a specific department, she had the responsibility of making sure that everybody was doing a lot of their paperwork properly. And she would rewrite their paperwork so that it was more understandable, more efficient. And changing people and changing the way they do things is one of the most difficult endeavors of all time.
Oh, yeah.
So she would say, this is the way I want you to do this. Please don't do it this way anymore. Do it this way. And there would be sometimes animosity, sometimes just, you know, blah, 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 muttering as they walked away. So if it snowballed into something, I'd bring them both in. And they would sit there, and she would explain to them the part of her job that they didn't know anything about. Once she explained that, the understanding was almost instantaneous in most cases. The problem is people don't look, again, at the rest of the story. So it's the same with a kid, you know. Once they learn to be diplomatic about things and say, this is why I want to see if we can do it this way because of this, this, and this. Not that you should have to explain everything you do to every single person, because that's not fair either. Then you spend your whole day just making excuses, it sounds like, for why you want to do it your way. But when it's important to the betterment of everybody, especially in a workplace, that's why a lot of places now, a lot of your big places are doing cross-training. So that people will understand the dilemmas that somebody else has faced once they do a job halfway and then pass it on to the next step of the procedure, and the person in the next step can't complete the task because of the way you're doing your job. That's a big deal. That's a big deal. And it's the same with kids. It doesn't change just because the tasks are smaller or less important. It's the same deal. Knowing how what you're doing is going to affect the next person in that assembly line, if you will. So he also says, we are not to take sides. Oh, no, I already read that one. We are supposed to help our clients accept the harsh realities of life, not to present them with fantasies of a world in which everyone is nice to them. It would be lovely if it was like that, wouldn't it? Would be lovely if every place you went, everybody cared about your feelings and whether or not you were happy, but that's not realistic at all. Not realistic at all.
That can be your outgoing world. You know, can you imagine if everybody was taught to be kind and respectful regardless of how people were treating them and not expect people to treat them the same? What if majority of people in the world all had that way of dealing with people? You'd see a lot more cooperation, a lot more respect and kindness out there, you know, between adult to adult, and then it would trickle down as good examples to children. Children just don't really have a lot of good grown-up mentoring to watch to know how to act when they become adults.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that is a major problem. That is a major problem because in so many, and we've, you know, that's one of my biggest pet peeves, is the fact that everybody finds fault in young people for generations. Young people, the new leaders of tomorrow, have been reprimanded for their behavior, for their inability to do things the way their forefathers did them. And that's kind of like a joke, isn't it? Isn't that kind of a joke? Because wasn't this a journey? And the people who start the journey set the precedence. And the deal with doing something with repetition, like living this life, is that we get better at it, right?
Exactly.
I mean, isn't that what's supposed to happen? And then when young people see something that they don't appreciate or they don't like, and they try to make a change. I'm often reminded of the 70s. I was already had a family, already had most of my kids. David was born in 73, and he's my youngest. So from 68 to 73, I was having babies. But the 70s, it was the hippie era. It was peace, free love, pot, of course, other things much worse than pot, LSD and I don't even, PCP being put in, marijuana and stuff like that. But the gist of that era was love everybody. Flowers in your hair, psychedelic clothes that didn't match each other. Everybody danced, and it was all about getting along with each other. And even though from a even now that I know what happened when it got so much like that, that the results were not as good as you would have liked them to be, thinking that everybody is talking about caring about each other, about loving each other, about living your life, believing what you believe, and kind of going with the flow. That was the 70s. What ended up happening is nobody had any ambition. Nobody, hippies, the personification of a hippie would come into the restaurant that I worked in, and I'd have to tell them that they had to leave because they'd smell so bad because they forgot to wash or change their clothes because nothing was important anymore. There was no, everything was just about, oh, yes, I love everybody, and walk around stoned, singing to themselves and everything. What started out to be a refreshing love fest turned into a bunch of lazy young people who didn't do anything productive. So there has to be guidelines for everything. Yes, I want everybody to care about each other. I think that's the way it should be. Do I want that to be the end all? No, because I've seen what happens, and it will end all, literally. Because productivity comes to almost a screeching halt. So yep. I always tell people, as a matter of fact, I had this conversation with one of my oldest grandchildren this weekend, and I talked about when you're the age he is, it's all about deciding which person you are on which day. And he said, what does that mean? You know, like multiple personalities, Graham? And I said, no. Sometimes you're Spike the grandson. Sometimes you're Spike the son. Sometimes you're Spike the brother. Sometimes you're Spike the employee. Sometimes you're Spike the boss. Sometimes you're Spike the significant other. Those are all different personifications that you take on. And all of them, the Spike that sits and talks with me is sweet, loving, easygoing, loves to analyze, and we discuss world problems all the time. The Spike that loses his patience with the guys that he's working with is a whole other Spike, right?
Right.
I mean, we know that, that we're all like that. So when you teach a little person about all these people that they're going to have to be rolled into one, it's a little bit hard to understand when they're real young. But when you come home, you can still be the prince. When you're out here, you have to stand in line with all the other princes and give them their fair shake as well. It's all about diplomacy. And being a diplomat is probably one of the strongest assets, I believe, you can have.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a combination of diplomacy and respect. If you're respectful of other people, then you're attentive to what they have to say. So it's actually a combination. Being diplomatic, which means, you know, trying to compromise on situations and not stand your ground, that's extremely beneficial. But there has to be a sincere respect, you know, where you're not just waiting your turn, but you're listening to what other people have to say, because maybe that will influence what you ultimately present to the group. And the reason I'm saying that is because that's actually happened to me, all right? I really am a very respectful person. I don't think I know it all. I'm very confident with the knowledge I have. So I'm very, you know, I have no qualms about presenting information that I have. You know, a lot of people say that I act like a know-it-all. No, I'm not a know-it-all. I'm confident with what I know, and I present it in that way. But if somebody says something that alters something that I just said, I am instantly in reevaluation mode because I respect people, because I know that I don't know everything. Regardless of how much I do know, I know that I don't know everything. And I think that people that have that attitude, because I work with a lot of people that think they do know it all, and they really don't, and their level of exposure is very, very little because they have this overblown appreciation for what comes into their own head or their own exposure, mm-hmm. and they don't open mm-hmm. up to new ideas. So someone like me, who maybe doesn't know as much, the reason I've amassed so much knowledge over the years is because I genuinely respect people. So I listen to what they have to say, and if they're going in a different direction than I was, I can switch gears on a dime because I don't take it personally. I'm looking for the best possible outcome. And mm-hmm. if somebody else's idea kind of changes mine a little bit and we can compromise in the middle and end up with a better result, well, isn't that fantastic? And that's what I'm going for. And I think that's something that, again, not with little tiny children, because with the little kids, you have to build them up first. So you're going to give them a certificate no matter what they do. Mm-hmm. Bailey, she's 2 years old now. She just got her first haircut. So she got her certificate, a first haircut certificate.
Oh, cute.
It was adorable. You see, Dawn texted me a picture of her yesterday. She said they're holding her certificate with this big smile. You know, it was traumatic in the beginning. By the end, she was fine, and she actually got a certificate. So now she's happy. She carries her certificate around, you know. But with little uh-huh. kids, you have to reward them for every milestone so that they want to do the next one. But then it gets to a point where kids have to be taught to be respectful, to be confident in what they know, but at the same time willing to listen to other people in case they have to take a compromise position. So diplomacy, respect, and compromise, if you can teach a child those three things growing up into a teenager and into an adult, you've really equipped them with very, very strong emotional attributes that will help them deal with difficult people as they get into the workplace or into relationships. That can work in relationships as well as a workplace. We keep comparing it to a workplace. But those particular emotions are very very helpful in just having good, healthy relationships with people, that same thing.
Absolutely. Well, and of course, if you, Spike and I have been together for 47 years, and it's all about give and take, all about that. And sometimes giving in doesn't mean you're giving up. It just means that you're giving in. Doesn't mean that you're giving up your point of view or what you think is right or wrong. It's just giving in for the sake of the relationship. And nothing is written in stone, and nothing is tattooed on your forehead that says, I gave up. It's all about the relationship, and I think some people actually scar when they feel like they didn't win that point, or they didn't win that argument, or they didn't win that that decision about who should decide what's going to happen and what's not going to happen. Geez, I wish I didn't have so many decisions to make, Shelley. I wish.
Well, there's also something to be said for, and I've said this to you, and I've said it to, I've said it on the show a couple times, but there's something about agreeing to disagree. You know, you mm-hmm. in compromising doesn't mean you have to say, you know, okay, you're right, I'm wrong, or stand your ground and say I'm right, you're wrong type of deal until somebody gives in. It could just be sometimes people come from such different experiences that it's just too difficult to get them to see this from your perspective. A lot of times it's not a situation of right or wrong. It's a situation of perception. And this is where language becomes so, so inefficient in the world. You know, if we were all psychic and could just jump into somebody else's mind and understand how they're perceiving something, you wouldn't have miscommunications anymore. But we only have words to use, and I can use particular row of words in a sentence and to 8 different people, and if you go back and ask those 8 different people what I said, you'll get 8 different things of what I just said, because each person is going to take my comment based on their experiences, how they use those words and things like that. So people have to understand how inefficient language is, okay? That's number one. Mm-hmm. So sometimes if I'm really getting into a heated discussion with somebody and I realize they're not getting my position, and I may understand their position, but I don't agree with it, I'll just finally say, look, let's just agree to disagree. You're making valid points, but based on what I've experienced, I'm not going there. And a lot of times, that's just what it is, agree to disagree. You know, if it's not a black and white comment, like, are we going to go to the movies at 8 o'clock, where you have to make a decision about one thing, you know, if it's a thing about perceptions or opinions, they're really never right or wrong. That's exactly what they are perceptions. Allow people to have their perceptions as long as they're willing to listen to you, and then just come to a point where you agree to disagree. You know, and one of you may move off your position, you know, days, weeks, months, years down the road based on other experiences, but don't hang a relationship. Don't hang the importance or the respectfulness of somebody on them always agreeing with you. That's very unhealthy.
Well, and don't you think different arguments that kids have are about immediate things? Most kids don't think in future kind of ideas. They're not thinking, well, if we do this today, then next week this is going to work better. Kids don't think like that, not real young kids. They're thinking about what's going to happen in the next 5 minutes, and usually not much further than that. So when they're having a discussion like that, let's, you know, like they're going out into the play yard at school, and somebody says, let's play tag. Most kids are like, yeah, let's play tag, and everybody goes with it. And then 5 minutes later, the same kid that said, let's play tag, says, let's play hide and seek. And somebody else is having fun playing tag, and they say, no, I don't want to. I want to keep playing tag. I don't want to play hide and seek. And the ability to look at each other and look around, and maybe there's five kids playing, which gives you an odd man out. Somebody says, let's play tag a little while longer, and then we'll play hide and seek. And everybody goes with it. It's kids like that are very, very flexible. But it's the idea that you teach them that it's okay for the kid who said, I don't want to play tag anymore, I want to play hide and seek, for him to say, okay, we can play tag a little bit longer and then play hide and seek. He doesn't feel like he's been shot down. He doesn't feel like he's being disrespected. It doesn't go that deep, right?
Right.
And that's the way it should be all the time.
Yep.
I mean, unless you're talking about, you know, should I jump off this cliff or not jump off this cliff? That's a different decision. You know.
Right, and that's exactly what happens. And I've seen that scenario play out with my own kids, you know, where one of them wants to do this, one of them wants to do that. And I would say for the most part, they do tend to, to cooperate. Now, there's a big age difference between Cody and Cheyenne. and sometimes because of that, you know, they get into little squabbles. But they will eventually... they'll eventually come to a common ground and, they'll decide to do the same thing. But I've used that technique with them where, like Cody wants to do this thing and Cheyenne wants to do that thing, so he thinks Cheyenne is wrong. No, Cheyenne, we should do it because of this reason. And I've had to have that conversation with him. I said, this is right for you because this is what you have fun with. Cheyenne doesn't have fun with this, honey. So we have to figure out a way because we're doing a family thing. This isn't our outing just with you. This is a family outing. So when everybody's out doing, we have to try to do things that everybody's going to have fun with, you know. And he listens. He hangs on every word you're saying, you know. I said, so another time we can come back and just do this thing with you, because what he wanted to do would have lasted an hour and a half, and then we wouldn't have been able to do what the rest of the family wanted to do. But instead of shooting him down, we just explained to him, you know, it's not wrong that you like this, but not everybody else does. So we'll make plans one time to have a Cody day, and we'll bring you back and we'll do this. And he was good with that. He understood the rationale that it was a family outing, not a his outing. And he just kind of was like, okay, all right. And that's where I'm saying we're actually teaching him compassion, reasonable. Now, he's only 5 years old, but he gets it. He didn't pout because he didn't get his way, because he's already developing that level of sensitivity where, okay, but I do want to come back. And we'll say, absolutely, we're definitely going to come back another time and just do this with you. But today, let's do something that everybody can have a little fun with. And he was good with it.
Okay. So, all right, now here's the dilemma. How do you make that happen What do you teach Cody and the rest of the kids in that instant for when you're not around or when an adult isn't around to say, this is what we want to do because this is what's right? What lesson are you going to give to him so that next time that happens and he doesn't get his way, he handles it the way you did? What are you going to say to him?
Well, basically, that's what we talked about. We told them that, you know, well, we said the family, and they said, but anytime you're out with a lot of people, I said, you have to look at what most people in the group want to do. I said, you can't really focus on one individual. I said, if it's like your birthday and we're taking you out for your birthday, then, yeah, then we're going to concentrate on what you want. But I said, if it's just a general outing, I said, you have to look at the family or the group. I mean, I did take a couple minutes to explain all that. I mean, this was like a two-minute conversation, you know,
right.
Really quick. But he got it, and then he wasn't upset anymore, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm saying is it is possible to reach really small kids with this because they understand more than sometimes we give them credit for. And having those conversations out now, sometimes he hasn't calmed down. Sometimes he just really wanted to do something. I mean, he is 5 years old. Sometimes he digs his heels in, and his dad will step in if he doesn't snap out. If you've tried to reason with him and he doesn't snap out of it, his dad will step in and say, look, buddy, he said, either snap out of it or we're going, because he says, I'm not having a good time with you acting like that. He said, we're here. Everybody's having a good time. We're going to come back and do what you want to do, and then he will eventually snap out of it. But the bottom line is you have to teach children how to have reasonable expectations. It's okay to want what they want. You should never shoot that down, and we're careful not to do that with him. It's okay that you want to do this thing, and we'll figure out a way to do it at another time, but it can't happen today. So, and you got to understand, at a five-year-old mind, everything is immediate. They want something, they have to have it 2 minutes later. They don't know how to plan for the future. They haven't developed that personality
right.
trait.
Right, exactly.
So they're devastated.
Yeah, everything is. Yeah, everything's instantaneous. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Bottom
well,
line is you
and
can
I think,
still... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I just think that was a good way, and I like the fact that Mike could step in and have it be a, you know, obviously take charge and take care of the situation, but do it kindly and do it without getting mad at Cody. So those are all
sure.
good parenting techniques. We're almost out of time, though. I want to let everybody know that on my Facebook page there's going to be some more information about Vibrant Health Institute. We're taking reservations. I'm hearing from lots of people, a lot of old friends from Hippocrates, a lot of old friends that I'm just making from Creative Health, which is what Vibrant Health Institute was before. So I had some very interesting conversations yesterday, but we are making an offer to everybody in the beginning, $500 a week in a shared accommodations for everything that goes with the Raw Food Institute. So you will never find a deal like that anyplace. So if anybody's interested, contact me. Can change your life, everybody. So I want everybody, though, to go out and have a good day today. The weather is changing as we speak, but I just got a notice from somebody in Ithaca, New York, and it's something like 17 degrees there, and the snow is blowing, and so 70 still sounds pretty good here.
Yeah, I guess. Oh. That's wild.
No comparison, right? No comparison.
Oh,
but that's
wow.
The other downside, of course, me going to Michigan. I had to go out and buy a winter coat yesterday. I was like, oh, geez, I haven't had a real winter coat in a very, very long time.
Oh,
but
my goodness.
I want to, I'm very excited about this, and we will talk about this again this week. But tomorrow we're going to talk about homelessness again because I got some very heartbreaking statistics this week. One in every 30 children is homeless in America. One out of every 30 children. I mean, if you can wrap your brains around that number, that's devastating. And the statistics are even worse than that in places with warm climates like Florida. So
right.
Everybody, though, go out today and have a great day, and we'll be back tomorrow. God bless. Thanks, Shell.
Thanks, Rainey. Thank you, everyone. We'll speak to you in the morning.
Bye-bye.